Welcome to Off the Cut, a podcast where we talk about building, making,
and answering all of your questions.
I'm Eric from Spensley Design Co.
And I'm Zach from Zach Builds. If you have a question that you would like us to answer on air, you can send it to offthecutpodcast@gmail.com.
You can find both of us on YouTube, Instagram, and unfortunately, because we have to keep up with kids, you can find us on TikTok too.
All right, now let's get into the show.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Off the Cut episode 71. We're up in Toronto. Today is known as Tuesday, June 27th, 2023. But here in Ohio, today is respectfully dedicated to the food of the day, onions.
Yum, yum, yum.
Yeah. So I feel like onions are a polarizing food for people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how so? Like, everybody likes onions. They just don't know that they like onions.
No, no. I've got a friend that claims, and he it's like a silly claim. He goes, dude, no, I'm allergic to onions because he just he's obviously not allergic to them. He just hates them so much that he refuses to eat any food if he knows that it has onions in it.
I see. As a society, can we start coming down harder on grown men with fake allergies?
Like gluten?
Like gluten and like just saying you're allergic to onions when you don't like them. And it's really a pet peeve of mine when people just like pretend that they're allergic to things.
Yeah. Just say you don't like it. Like that's
just
fine.
Just say you don't like it. Yeah, that's
fine. I don't like onions.
But you don't need to make up the story like, oh, my body rejects it the second I get any onion inside of me. It's like, no, you just don't like it. It's fine.
Or like if you're like, oh, yeah, every time I eat a lot of cheese, I feel bad.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Derek. Don't eat that much cheese.
And that might not necessarily be being lactose intolerant. You know, like if you eat a brick of cheese and you feel bad, that doesn't mean that you're lactose intolerant. It just means
you ate a brick of cheese.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm down for a brick of cheese any day.
Yeah, me too. But you know you're going to feel bad after you eat a solid brick of cheese. Anybody.
Yeah. And that's just like, like a whole brick of cheese. How many calories is in a whole brick cheddar cheese calories? It's got to be like 1,500 calories.
What's a brick? A pound?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Let's do a pound.
One pound cheddar cheese calories. It's about 1,900 calories.
Okay, yeah. So that's your whole daily intake for a lot of people in one condensed block. Of course you're going to feel like crap.
Right. That's like what? That's eating, oh, baby. That's like two Big Macs or something?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How many calories is a Big Mac?
Just the Big Mac by itself? I'm going to guess 900. No, 800.
Wait. It says 563 calories in a Big Mac?
Damn. Well, I don't know if you've had a Big Mac lately, but there's not much to it.
No, I don't think I've ever had one.
Oh, you've never actually had one. It doesn't look anything like it does in the pictures. Like any images you're seeing online right now, completely disregard those and imagine the same burger, but it was sold by Walmart or Harbor Freight.
Right.
That's what a real Big Mac looks like.
Yeah, so if you eat an entire brick of cheese, it's literally the equivalent of eating almost four Big Macs.
Yeah.
Of course you feel like hell.
Yeah.
I don't know. What's another common, pretend food allergy that people have?
I have a great one. People who say that they're allergic to MSG and Chinese food.
Yeah, what the hell is that? Like, I truly don't even know what that is.
Yeah, it's funny because if you do a little bit of research on MSG, so it's monosodium glutamate, and I think it's an amino acid. Is that what it is?
It's a flavor-enhancing food additive typically used in Asian cooking, fast foods, and commercially packaged food products. It's a white powder derived from natural glutamic acid found in seaweed. So it's natural.
Yeah, it's natural. And so that's the thing.
Tomatoes and cheese.
Yeah. So people say that they're allergic to MSG all the time, but it's naturally in tomatoes, cheese, seaweed, and all of these other things.
Huh.
So that's one that I like to bust people on all the time. They'll be like, oh, I'm allergic to MSG. I'm like, oh, so you can't eat tomatoes? I'll be like, what? I gotta eat tomatoes all the time. Boom, busted.
Interesting. So it's been branded as an unhealthy processed ingredient, despite the overwhelming lack of scientific evidence.
Yeah, there was, it was kind of like in the 1980s, 1990s, there was like a big scare, I think probably mostly based in racism, people like not, like wanting to disparage Chinese food restaurants, because they would cook pretty heavily with MSG, because I don't know if you've ever used MSG, but it is delicious. Yeah, I got a little salt shaker in my pantry, and I put it on everything.
Yeah.
But I remember being a kid, and all the Chinese food places around in my neighborhood would have neon glowing signs that said no MSG, because they had to like fight against this stereotype that they all cooked with MSG.
That's wild.
I know, right?
Okay. Yeah. No, I didn't know it was that polarizing.
Yeah. It was a big thing. I remember my mom being the typical, you know, 1990s overprotective mom was like, didn't want to. She was like afraid of MSG. She didn't want to order it.
Well, yeah, she probably watched the news and was terrified.
Exactly. Back then, you couldn't
just pull it up and figure it out on your own.
There was no internet, so yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, you just the had news to go based the gospel.
You just had to go based on what you heard from the other moms at school.
Oh man.
Yeah.
It'd be tough to be a mom these days.
I feel like maybe slightly. Well, no, I take that back. I was going to say slightly easier with the internet, but then I thought about what I was about to say.
That makes it 10 times worse.
Like,
let's be real. When we were growing up, you know, we didn't really have social media until we were just about out of school.
Yeah.
Right? Can you imagine being like a 5th, 6th, 7th grade kid? Because that's the worst time for about everyone. Because everyone is like just in a weird stage of life. And everyone, I don't care who you are. Yeah. Everyone got bullied at that stage of life.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how much worse it would be with social media?
Oh, God. It'd be a nightmare. I remember how self-conscious I was. And going home. Ooh, nice. Cracked one.
Oh, yeah.
Strawberry going home lemonade. Very nice. Going home was like a reprieve, because like you'd be like, oh, finally, I don't have to deal with the judgment of all my classmates for, you know, like the next 12 hours or whatever.
Yeah. And anyone that says they never got bullied is lying.
Liar. I'll bully them. If somebody says that they never got bullied, then send them my way. I'll sort them right out.
We'll knock them out. We'll make them listen to the Green Suitors podcast. That'll be a
Oh, no. That's too cruel.
You wouldn't want to do that. Is there any other weird things that people say they're allergic to?
Gluten.
Gluten. Yeah, gluten's a big one.
Yeah, gluten. That's popular. But yeah. Let's be real. I know there's the celiac thing.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people, they're like, oh, I don't want to eat gluten for like health reasons. They're like, oh, you know, it's supposed to be better for my gut or whatever. If that's why you're doing it, just say it. Be like, oh, I've just chosen not to do it or just not to eat it. Don't make up that you have an allergy. Just say you don't like it.
Exactly.
Like, I'm not going to make up that I don't like the Green Suitors podcast. I'm just going to flat out say it. Available on Apple and Spotify.
Yeah.
Only about 6% of the population is allergic to gluten.
6%? That sounds high to me.
Yeah.
That's probably like a survey result. That's probably capturing all the damn liars that we're talking
that's
about.
That's intolerance.
Yeah, okay, just search what percentage
celiac
of the population
is affected by 1%.
1%, okay. That's
1% of the 6%?
About 1%. It's more common disease.
Dadu in the chat just said peanuts. Now, I know there was a whole thing lately.
Oh, yeah, in the 90s.
Everybody was allergic to peanuts, or every classroom had a kid who was allergic to peanuts. Yeah. And so the really interesting thing about that, though, is that, I mean, I'm sure there are some people who have anaphylactic shock and their airways close up and whatever. Definitely overstated. But a really interesting little fact about that is in Israel, they have like basically no peanut allergies.
Really?
And they think a really popular or a reason for that is there's a really popular baby treat there, like baby food that's peanut based. So there's just way more exposure to peanuts at a young age.
Or they just wipe them out.
Or they just wipe them out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
Well, they do have compulsive military service in Israel, so maybe.
Interesting. Well, I got a lot of things that we could potentially talk about this week, so maybe we can move on from the food.
Okay. We've done enough time on fake allergies.
Yeah, well, you know, we don't need to disparage our listeners any more than that. Because how many of our listeners do you think have pretend food allergies?
I mean, statistically, at least 10% of them.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So that's a wake-up call to all you listeners out there.
Stop pretending you have fake allergies that you don't. Zach, what have you been up to in the last week? We had a guest on. We had Morley Kurt on with us last week.
Great guest. It was a pleasure to have him in the hypothetical studio.
It was great to talk to him and get to meet him.
Yeah, it was. It definitely was. I've been taking the last couple days a little easy. So I had my houseboat trip, my annual houseboat trip that I do with my guys friends last weekend. So that was a lot of fun. Rained a lot, but... we had a way nicer boat than we did last year, so that was fun.
Did the boat have a name?
Spindrift.
Huh. Oh, yeah, not the best name.
Not the best name. Kind of implies that it's going to spin out of control into drift, but it was okay. Yeah. Good times.
Any notable stories from that weekend that are appropriate?
Yeah, I'm trying to parse down to the appropriate ones. So the houseboat had a water slide on the back of it. Oh, and I bought this this inflatable party island that's so it's like it's a big floaty essentially that has four seats in it and then a hole in the middle. So we were having a good time going down the water slide into the floaty and then trying to thread the needle into the center of the floaty.
You're talking my language.
I ended up directly, maybe not directly on top of, but like I was shooting for one of the corners and I ended up in another corner that happened to be occupied by another one of my friends. And just eventually, I essentially ended up spearing him in the side with my feet.
You got a nice, you went feet first, not head first.
Yes, feet first into him and kind of dislodged him out of the seat to the point where we both kind of forced into this tiny little seat. It was a good time. He eventually forgave me.
Yeah, I was just worried you were going to go head first and like you just got like a head full of crotch.
Yeah, no, thankfully not. Thankfully not.
Were any beverages spilled during that act?
Yes, we did. We did lose a couple beverages.
Oh, no.
But it's okay. We were well stocked.
That's good. That's good to hear. Yeah. Any other notable stories?
Nothing too crazy. We found we camped out on an island one night. That was a lot of fun. We went into like a little small local town and kind of explored the local town. But outside of that, just some good old fashioned male bonding.
Yeah. Talking about nothing. Is it one of those you go home and Sophie is like, "Well, what'd you guys talk about?" And you're like,
"Nothing."
Yeah.
Nothing.
Well, the thing is, she wants to know what's going on in my friends' lives when I get back. Like my one friend flew up from New York to do the trip, so I get home and she's like, "Oh, what's going on with Janos? Like, how's his job going?" I'm like, "I don't know." Well, what do you mean? You just spent the whole weekend hanging out with him. I'm like, "Yeah, we were talking about like which McDonald's in Toronto is the best McDonald's to go to at 3 a.m. in the morning."
Right.
So,
like, yeah, these are important guy topics.
Exactly. Or hypothetical scenarios. We did a bunch of those. All the fun stuff.
That's fair. Well, this weekend, I took a little break. Miranda and I went down to Cincinnati, which is where we're going to get married. So it's like about 2 hours away.
Right.
So we went to go just kind of get away for a little bit, just do a little like long weekend trip. We went to a concert on Saturday, so I was like, "Well, why don't we just book a room Friday night and Saturday night, and then just kind of hang out?"
Yeah, I like that.
So, let's see.
How far away is Cincinnati from Columbus?
It's like 90 to 100 miles, so I can get there in 2 hours.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Nice.
So Friday night we went to a distillery. Had a great time. We like to do a little tour.
Mm-hmm.
Then you do some sampling, and then we went to a brewery and hung out. But Saturday, we get up, we go to this brunch spot, pretty cool, had a good time, and then it's like, okay, we're going to go to another distillery tour around 2, maybe 3 o'clock. Okay. So we hang out for a little bit, and then we go over to this other distillery. And we pull up, and this place is, I mean, just empty. There's one group of people in there. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, okay, you know, maybe it's just a weird time, or like there's events going on and this place is just dead, right?
Yep.
So then we notice that there's one kind of like front of house waitress lady. And you ever meet somebody who you talk to them and you're like, they're not 100% there, almost to the point where I think she was either coming down from a heavy night of drugs, or mm-hmm. perhaps a newly recovered drug addict.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So I get that.
She wasn't all there.
Yeah. Kind of like a husk of a person.
Right. Just like didn't really know that we were there either. It was just kind of like, it was just being alive, I would say. Mm-hmm. And so we like check in for the distillery tour. Like, oh yeah, you know, we're here for this tour at like 3 o'clock or whatever. And she goes, hmm. And I'm like, okay. I was like, what's hmm? She goes, hold on. So she comes like 10 minutes later, and I'm like, oh God, this is already not a good experience, right? She comes back like 10 minutes later. She's like, so Chris, the guy who does our tours, isn't here, but I can show you around. And we're like, oh, okay. So she kind of like, it's pretty small distillery. So she kind of like takes us to like where the stills are. And she literally, no joke, just goes, so this is where we distill the stuff.
Oh, so she's now taking over for this Chris guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, then, I see. Okay, okay.
Yeah, and then so we're like, oh my God. Miranda and I look at each other in the eye. We're like, this is like, no. So then she's like, okay, well, let me take you to our other spot. And we're walking out there and we're just like, oh my God. I don't have the guts to tell her, like, we're done. We're out of here.
See, the nice thing about being in a big tour group is that you can just peel off whenever you want to peel off. If there's 30 people, it's like, okay, no big deal. Right. But how do you interrupt the lifeless husk of a person you're the only people on the tour to let them know that you're like, you know what, this ain't cutting it for me. I'm out of here.
Right. And so, like, I just feel so bad. I can tell that this girl's, like, she's trying.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, she's, like, she doesn't know any of the stuff that like she's probably like supposed to talk to us about. So she takes us like to this other area or whatever. And then we hear like a knock on the door, and then she goes, oh, thank God. This Chris guy shows up.
Oh,
Chris also appears to have just gotten off some sort of bender. And it's just like, kind of like, pull it together, man. Pull it together. Yeah. It was kind of like his mannerisms and his like body language.
Do you think Chris was like around back dry heaving when you showed up?
I don't know.
And somebody called him. He was like, I can't do it. You got to cover for me.
And so at this point, like, we hear the knock, and then like Chris shows up, and we're thinking, oh, okay, the tour is going to be back on.
Yeah.
Chris goes, Come back in this room, you know, sit down at our like bar thing for a minute. I've got to get a couple things together. So we're thinking like, dude, you got to get yourself together right now.
Yeah.
So we're sitting there again, like Miranda and I aren't saying anything, but we're like looking at each other and we're like, oh, do I just say like, hey, thanks so much. I make up some BS excuse or whatever.
Yeah.
So I see Chris bring out like a block of cheese.
Oh no.
Start cutting up pieces of cheese. And then I'm thinking, dude, is he like the cook? Is he like the guy that the tour guide and the cook here? Cause they have like a kitchen. And I'm so freaking confused. And then another couple of minutes passes. He like walks away and then comes back. And then he is like revived, like a Ooh. New soul.
Oh,
is inside this Chris guy. And then he starts taking us on this tour. And I have never once heard someone so passionate and enthusiastic about like the history of this building and like the distillery. And like this guy basically gave like an hour long story that was unbelievably interesting, took us through the whole distillery, and it ended up, it was like a speakeasy. So like during Prohibition, they had like hidden rooms and stuff like that. And That's took cool. us down this like hidden pathway staircase up into the old speakeasy that he had personally renovated the entire thing, refurnished it, had like artifacts and was telling us all these stories. And then he's playing like old jazz music and stuff from that time while he's telling the stories. Takes us in like the second room of the speakeasy, which is where the rich people used to bang prostitutes and stuff.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And he has like little pieces of cheese and like pieces of fruit and chocolate and pretzels and stuff like that. And he's like, this is where we're going to do the tasting. And you like pair all these different things with the bourbon and stuff they had. And I was like, that is crazy to me that we went from an absolute 0 out of 10 experience
mm-hmm.
to just a complete turnaround to a 10 out of 10, where it was like the coolest thing we'd ever done.
Do we think that Chris snuck off, did a couple lines in the bathroom, and then came back like ready
That's
to go?
What we said. That's what we said.
Like, bump, take the edge off.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so like, He was a little jittery. Mm-hmm, so like, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe he just had to go pull himself together, but it was nuts. It was super cool. So if anybody in Cincinnati is ever down looking for a really cool tour at a small place, it's called Pensive Distilling. Okay. And we went on the speakeasy tour.
Okay.
But just make sure that Chris guy is there and that he's pulled himself together, and you'll have a really good time. If not, it'll be a dud.
Yeah, maybe bring a little bag of Coke for him just to make sure that he's got what he needs to get the job done.
You know, I'm not jumping to any conclusions.
I am.
But I would heavily doubt that there were not extracurricular activities going on before we started that tour.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
'Cause it was a completely different guy that came in.
It is kind of funny, like, you know, he's basically taking you on this tour that's like, you know, 50 years ago or well, however long Prohibition was. I guess it was probably more like 70, 80 years ago.
100 years ago, I think.
Yeah, well, I guess it was the 20s, wasn't it? It was 1920s Prohibition?
Yeah,
probably.
So, yeah, closer to 100 years ago. He's probably like, well, 100 years ago, we at this facility ignored the drug laws of the day. And then today and today we carry on that tradition.
I could see that happening though, but it was super neat. It was super neat. It's like sometimes when you sign up for things on vacation, like you have one perception of how you think it's going to be. And you're like, that was nothing like that. But
yeah,
it's cool.
Yeah. Nice. Nice.
It was like $8.
Okay. Okay. $8. Wow. That's good.
We gave him a $20 tip. The tip was more than the tour cost.
Is that inclusive of drinks and cheese?
Yeah. Yeah. It came with the drinks and cheese.
Wow. Damn. Right. When I was in Cuba many years ago with Sophie, speaking of things that didn't turn out the way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, vacation things that didn't turn out the way you think they did. We decided to go on a Jeep tour. So, okay. Me being me, I'm imagining, you know, we're going to go, we're going to get in the back of a Jeep and they're going to drive us around the jungles of Cuba and show us some cool things. I was kind of right, but basically they took all of the hotel guests out and there's like, here are the Jeeps. They kept calling them Jips, but I guess that was just kind of like a weird, like lost in translation thing. And they also weren't Jeeps. They were like Suzuki cars from, you know, 1980s, because Cuba has the embargo, so they can't get any American cars there, and a Jeep is an American car. Anyways, they had like 10 Jeeps, and they said, okay, so who here can drive standard? And most people did not raise their hands. Luckily, I knew how to drive standard, so I was assigned to be the driver of one of these Jeeps. And basically, what we did was we just got in these like crappy broken Jeeps. There was one guy who's the leader, and then we just followed them around the island, and we did some like pretty serious off-roading. We went into some really remote villages. There were like cows and stuff on the road that they had to like clear out of the way. And Cuba's a weird place in that, you know, because they don't have access to the same level of imports, there's like the line between like horse-drawn buggy and car is very thin there. So you'll be driving down the road next to a wagon, or like not even a wagon, like a husked out frame of a car that's being pulled by three donkeys. So it was an interesting experience, to say the least. I got to legitimately drive in Cuba with a bunch of locals on the road. So that was fun.
So but did it start out like you're like, what in the hell? And then this is sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Huh. It kind of went the opposite direction. I thought it was going to be like a boring kind of like, you know, tour, like, oh, look at this, look at that. And it turned into just absolutely insane driving on some of the most lawless roads you've ever seen in your entire life.
So it's like it started out Green Suitors podcast and then turn to Off the Cut.
Exactly. 100%.
That makes
100%.
Sense. What was like the wildest thing that you think you saw out there of just like,
well, one thing that was really striking about Cuba. So Cuba is like basically one big charade for tourists. So they took us to downtown Havana at one point. Okay. And they're kind of showing us around town, and they're like, okay, this is, you know, this is this big cigar store. This is this big rum distillery. Sure. And we're right in the middle of Havana. And it's like, okay, this is pretty nice. So we stopped, we parked the Jeeps, and they said, okay, you have like 15 minutes now. Just kind of wander around and see what you see. And it's freshly paved streets. It's, you know, relatively new buildings. Looks very European. Nice. So Sophie and I kind of wander like two blocks off the beaten trail, and all of a sudden paved roads disappear, the buildings become much more dilapidated, there's beggars everywhere. And I realized it's kind of like, you know, the scenes in like Hollywood movies where they're like they have like a Western stage set up somewhere for filming, and it's literally just like the fronts of the buildings.
Yeah.
Facade.
Yeah, it's just a facade. It was like that in Cuba. Like, they had this one nice corridor that was like, okay, we bring all the tourists here, we show them how nice downtown is, and then we get them back to the hotels. And it was just like that. It was like completely manufactured, like one nice strip, and then, okay, if you go 10 meters this way or 10 meters that way, it's just extreme poverty.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
But do you think it's basically not a tourism trap, but like a tourism fallacy to like try to get people to be like, oh, you've got to come here.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, because it's like such a poor and impoverished country. I think they try and make this one area look really nice so that tourists leave with a positive impression, tell their friends and send more. But it's like they really just build up this one little area. It made the whole thing feel like really fake and artificial. It's like you don't get to really see real Cuba when you're there. You're just seeing this like curated kind of illusion of what they want Cuba to look like.
Well, I think the amusement park.
Yes.
The amusement park.
Yeah.
I feel like that's pretty common for a lot of foreign destinations. Like you hear people are like, I went to whatever island or something like that. And it's just like, okay, but the place you went was like a resort.
Yeah.
But like the rest of that place is super impoverished. So I think of like Jamaica.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Like for anyone who's been to Jamaica, they know like you show up and like around the island is just covered with like crazy all-inclusive resorts. 100 yards away on the opposite side of the road is like people that, you know, have like corrugated panels with holes in them as their roof. And it's just like, holy smokes. Like, I guess you have to know what you're getting into when you go to places like that.
The difference between that and this was that it felt orchestrated in Cuba, like the government or whatever was trying to create this illusion. Here's a good conspiracy theory for you, was trying to create this illusion. Whereas in Jamaica and stuff like that, it's like it's the resorts that are kind of like trying to pull the wool over your eyes a little bit. It's like, hey, don't look across the street at all the poverty. Look over this way with the nice beaches.
Yeah.
Stay here. We got it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got it all here. Don't leave. Yep. Please don't leave. Interesting. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, so what have you been, any work, you working on anything good, Zach? Anything exciting going on over there?
Yeah, I'm working on a little custom game console. I had I did another one. Yeah, I did a custom Xbox earlier in the year, and that video did really well. So I'm working on a custom Nintendo Switch right now.
Ooh.
How are you going to customize it?
Yeah. What's that?
We have to wait to see. I said, how are you going to customize it, or do we need to wait to see?
So turns out you can hack the Nintendo Switch. So that was the step number one of the project, was hacking it. And that allowed me access to it so that I could do things like overclock it. I can install custom software on it. And so now that I've overclocked it, it's generating a lot more heat. So I'm building a custom dock for it that's going to have like some cooling integrated into it and some custom features integrated into it. So it's going to essentially be like a more powerful version of the Switch when I'm done with it.
So as an ignorant person like myself, is the way that it comes out of the box insufficient to play all the games on it?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So basically from the factory, the way it comes from the box, Nintendo has tuned it very conservatively to run cool, so it's not hot to the touch, and so that it has as much battery life as possible when you're playing it in handheld mode. And
Okay.
As such, a lot of the games that you play on it, they get kind of laggy and choppy. But if you go into it and you hack it and you overclock it, you tune it up a little bit, then it can start playing all of these games at a much smoother frame rate, and they're much less choppy. Yeah. And the trade-off is that it generates more heat, and there's my custom dock right there. That's where that comes in.
So why not water cool it like your computer?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Well, I wanted to preserve the fact that it was handheld, right? And if it's water cooled, then it's tethered. But I like where your head's at.
Okay, then you could do that with an Xbox or a PlayStation or something.
Yeah, yeah. The DIY Perks did a water cooled PS5 earlier in the year, and it was pretty interesting how he did it.
So why would you want the standalone Switch when you can use like your everything console? Is the everything console just not go up to the Switch?
It does actually go up to the Switch. I could use my everything console to do the Switch, but it was, you know, content's gonna content.
Oh yeah, yeah. I was actually thinking about that on the way home from the gym today. Was like, so you've been doing a lot of the like console overhauls, computer overhauls, retro console builds and stuff, and I was thinking like, man, how many more of these things can you do?
Well, that's the thing. Once you do a few of them, I thought I would kind of tap out. I was like, okay, I'm going to kind of run out of things to do here, but the more of them I do, I'm like, oh, but then I could do this. I think this is a good lesson for anybody at home, because I've often been in situations where I've thought, oh, I'm going to run out of ideas. If I go down this path, I'm going to eventually hit a brick wall 3 or 4 projects down the road, and I won't be able to continue on it because there'll just be nothing left there for me to explore. But the more you do it, the more things you realize are possible down that road. So I've already got like 3 or 4 other little projects that I think I could kind of do in a similar vein down the road. Like, I want to do a custom Nintendo 64 at some point, because the Nintendo 64 was like, that was my childhood. And there's actually a really active modding community behind it. So there are a whole bunch of cool things that you can do to it if you're willing to crack one open and play with the hardware a little bit.
So here's what I would want to see you do. You remember, everybody has a Nintendo, well, not everyone who had a Nintendo 64.
All the cool kids.
Yeah. Knows that there's that like bay on the bottom.
Yeah.
That was for that like CD disc drive thing that never released.
N64DD.
It actually did release, but they just sold very few of them.
Was it like only in Europe or something like that?
I think only in Japan. Derek, maybe you can pull this up on eBay, but I think they go for like $10,000 a unit now.
Yeah. They, I do know that they only released them in Japan.
Yeah.
And they did have some here for development, but nobody, nothing got developed for here.
Yeah. So I would love to do that, but I don't know that, you know what? I should look and see if anybody's made like a, kind of like a homemade Nintendo 64 disc drive.
So I guess the reason I brought it up and what was kind of in my head is like, you've got the 3D printer now. What if you could find like a file or perhaps make the file to like 3D print it? So like the video, the title working concept of the video could be something along the lines of like, I finally got my hands on the Nintendo 64 disc drive thing. Ooh. But then you have to find some way to like make that functional. So maybe that's where you house like a bunch of like different fans to like keep the Nintendo cool, or like, I don't know, just it's like something kind of interesting where like it kind of brings that back, that nostalgia of like, this thing was never available, but now I have it, but it actually does something even better than what it was originally intended to do.
I like that. Cool. That's a great concept. Yeah. And speaking of 3D printing, I've been trying to do this Nintendo Switch project almost exclusively. There's going to be a little bit of woodworking in it at the end, but it's almost exclusively with the 3D printer.
Okay. I'm excited. Yeah. I still haven't seen your last two videos. I'm so behind on my YouTube stuff.
No worries.
I'm still watching stuff from April right now.
Yeah. Do you actually have like a little like playlist of all the videos you want to watch?
My subscription list.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm the person who uses the subscription list.
Yeah, you're right. So how much is that only $1,300, Derek?
Yep.
Oh, that's a write-off, baby. Write it off.
I know. If I get a big sponsorship, maybe I will buy one of those. That's pretty badass.
Well, now that you're on Mark's team, you should be able to help you out, get you something good.
I know. I'm waiting for my first thing to come through. It's taking forever. I've only been signed with them for like 48 hours now, 72 hours.
It'll take a little time. It's kind of slow right now, just in general in the sponsorship world. So
I've got...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I've gotten like so many people reaching out lately, but it's all just like bottom of the barrel crap offers. Yeah. So.
Right. So what is that Nintendo disc drive thing supposed to do?
It was literally just a way that you could play a CD. And it was funny because it was like a CD in a cartridge. It was just... The biggest limitation of the Nintendo 64 was those cartridges. They were really expensive to make, and they didn't have that much storage. They couldn't like hold that much information. And that's why the PlayStation dominated that generation, was because they had cheap storage. For a dollar, you could have 10x the storage that a Nintendo 64 cart would have. So that allowed you to have things like full motion video, high quality music, like high resolution textures. It allowed you to do all these things. So Nintendo was like, okay, well, why don't we make a little add-on for the Nintendo 64 that allows you to have some of those same advantages.
Right.
I think they were planning ahead and hoping to be able to expand out that line as the future of the console went. But then we moved on to that next generation so quick that they made the jump and went to GameCube.
Yeah.
Because they had the expansion port and on the top and on the bottom.
On the GameCube, there was one on the top?
No, on the N64, they had that expansion port on the top so you could enhance the graphics.
Right. Or the little red brick thing that you slammed in there.
And they were going to go one step further on that at the hard drive in tandem to enhance those graphics, because all they had going for them, obviously, was the load time.
Yes, yes.
Hmm.
Yeah, fun fact about, I just learned this recently. So, like, a Nintendo 64 cartridge, so when you put a disc into PlayStation, it's reading information off that disc and then loading it onto the PlayStation. When you put a cartridge into a Nintendo 64, because it has so many little connectors and interlinks, that cartridge actually becomes like part of the system. It's like plugging in a new piece of hardware. Huh. And that's why the loading times were so much better on the Nintendo 64 than the PlayStation. It wasn't really reading stuff so much as it was just accessing a different part of its hardware.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I never knew.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of technology, actually, before we get to that, we want to give a huge shout out to our returning top tier patrons.
Hell yeah.
We've got Brooke Appler, Dadu, Luke Schmidt, Derek Jennings at Pecan Tree Designs, Corey Duvall, Jason Price at Priceless Pro Designs, Scott Eastman at EC's Woodshop, and the Power Cocker, formerly known as Wes.
Woo!
So those are just some of the people that are supporting us over on Patreon. They get access to the after show where we answer tons of questions. They also get they get merchandise. They get their name on the podcast.
Access to the Discord server. And hang out on Patreon where we post fun stuff on Patreon. Sometimes Eric likes to post new conspiracy theories he's found.
Nudes.
Yeah.
But he doesn't want to share those.
Yeah.
The nudes.
You get access. You get access to both of our OnlyFans for free.
Yes. And remember, when you support us on Patreon, every dollar that goes towards us does not go to the Green Suitors podcast. And that's the most important thing.
It's a public service.
Yeah. Because every time a dollar goes to the Green Suitors podcast, a really cute puppy dies.
Right into the wood chipper.
And only you can prevent cute puppies from dying.
Exactly.
But let's see. So, speaking of technology, I've been struggling. And PC users are going to rejoice when I say this. Okay, so I got this new laptop. I don't know how long ago? Month? 2 months ago?
The Mac Pro, right? MacBook Pro?
MacBook Pro something or other. I don't know. Cool. It was expensive. But so I got it. Everything worked swimmingly. No issues. And then one time, maybe 2-3 weeks ago, I got up in the morning and, clicked my mouse and it didn't respond. I was like, this is weird. So I opened it up, didn't turn on. So I pressed the power button. It was like, the little thing that just comes up, it's like a red battery and it's like, plug it in. And I'm like, what do you mean? It is plugged in.
Yeah.
So I was very confused. No matter what I did, I'd plug it in and I could get it to boot up and then the battery would say it was on 1%. And then I'd hover my mouse over the battery. It would say power source, power adapter, battery not charging. I'm like, what the hell? So then naturally I was like, okay, well, it's within like the warranty. I'll just take it in the Apple store.
Yeah.
Of course, when I go to the Apple store, it works no problem.
Oh, no.
And so they're like running a bunch of diagnostics and all kinds of stuff like that. And they're like, listen, like we don't see anything.
Uh-oh.
And so they ran diagnostics on the computer, on the charger. They tried other chargers and all of them worked fine. So I was like, okay, no issue. I went home and it was working fine. Maybe it's just a weird thing, right?
Yeah, maybe a little lint got in there or something.
Right. So I got home from, actually, this is on like Friday before I left for Cincinnati for the weekend. I had the same issue. So I'm like, what the hell? I tried a bunch of stuff. It didn't work. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to leave it unplugged for the whole weekend. Just let it do its thing. Came back on Sunday. Same issue. So I took it in to the Apple store again yesterday. And thankfully, not thankfully, I guess, the issue persisted.
Yeah, it's still broken.
Right, still broken. So, like, I'm at the Apple store for, like, 2 hours. They're running all sorts of other diagnostics. They, like, get other people to come out. They're like, you got to see this, and, like, grab somebody else.
That's the worst. The worst feeling when the tech is getting, like, the other techs to come over and take a look at it. You want the tech to be like, oh, I know what this is. Like, here you go. Like, I just had to swap this little switch inside of it. It's good to go.
Right. And so he's like, everything is coming back like A+, 100% golden. I don't know what the problem is. So he's like, all right, what we're going to do is we're going to send it out. And keep in mind, while I'm literally at the Apple store, my agent Mark sends me a message. And he's like, hey, by the way, that video that you need to do for July, they now want you to do it like the first or second week of July. Is that going to be an issue? And so I'm like, oh my God, my laptop doesn't work. I don't have a computer. And so I'm like panicking, getting real stressed out. And like, I basically just like tell Mark what's going on. He's like, okay. He's like, just keep me updated. We'll work through this. I'm like, okay. So anyway, they're like, yeah, we're going to ship out your computer and get it like serviced. So I was like, any idea how long that's going to take? And he's like, you know, there's a holiday coming up. It's probably like 1 to 3 weeks. I'm like,
oh no.
And so I'm stressing out, like, what am I going to do as far as a video? But then I remembered I had my old laptop. So I was like, okay, at least I can like edit something and put it together.
Yeah.
And like pull down my files from the cloud that's going to take an eternity to download.
Right.
But then I got a message this morning from Apple that says my computer had been repaired and they're airmailing it to me and I will have it tomorrow morning.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, that's good. Very nice.
So I'm like, thank God. I just want to know what it is, because if I go online, it just says your device has been repaired. Like, I want to know
what. Yeah.
Just as like a consumer, I want to know what happened to it. Right.
Yeah. I wonder if when you get it back, it'll give you like, sometimes I remember getting stuff repaired by Apple in the past and they give you like a little slip of paper that says like a statement of work, essentially, of what they did. Oh, I wonder if they're still doing that.
I don't know. If I had to guess, it's probably, I think those computers are all just one solid piece, aren't they?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So they probably just basically replaced all the guts.
Yeah. Hopefully they found some way to like transfer over your data.
No. I backed it up before I went there. I really don't save anything on my computer. Everything is on
the cloud or on the
server. So like they're like, is your data backed up? I'm like, yeah, it's fine.
Oh, I'm surprised they didn't just give you one off the shelf then.
Right. Well, I think it's because it was a custom one.
Because
it's like a custom configuration.
Yeah, you don't think they actually had one like that in the store?
I would assume not. And they would probably rather repair it than give a unit out, maybe.
Maybe. I remember back in the day, like I had, this is going to date me, but I had an iPod video.
Right.
That I took to Apple because I think the headphone jack was broken on it. And they just gave me a new one off the shelf rather than repairing it.
Seems easier.
I always thought that was one of the benefits of going to the Apple store, was that they actually had inventory there to replace it. But they might just not have had anything in stock.
Yeah, I don't know. But hopefully I get the computer back tomorrow and I'm all good to go and I can pump out this video no problem.
Yeah.
So when I was editing the video, I was like, I'm going to take just an old video, kind of like a talking head topical video, and then that's how I'm going to integrate like the Jackery into this, because they want it like seen a lot and like whatever.
Wait. Are you doing two videos for Jackery?
Yeah, I did a two deal with them. Two video deal with them.
Okay. All right. Nice.
So I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have the time to build something new to like really show this thing off. I was like, what the hell am I going to do in this short of time period?
Yeah.
I was like, wait, I already have the script done for this talking head video. why don't I basically just reshoot that video? It'll take me like an hour and then be done with it. So that's what I worked on today.
And this video doesn't have to have the Jackery actually being used in it. It just has to say this video was sponsored by.
No. So they want like a couple minutes total of like it being in the background of the video or like it being used. So what I did is I just plugged a bunch of I didn't say I'm not getting explicit.
I plugged
a bunch of crap into it, and I plugged like my lights and everything into it, and I'm just like talk about it during the mid roll. I'm like, yeah, you know, just so you know, I have every single thing in this video, the lights, the camera equipment, like the tools that I'm using, and like the B roll, all powered by this thing. That's kind of cool. How I'm doing it. So
yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
Do you mind sharing what this new talking head video is about?
It's I did the one like how to price your work video.
Yes.
This is a kind of a follow-up from that, and it's five reasons why you aren't able to sell anything. Like five mistakes you're making about why you can't sell anything.
Ooh, because I like that.
It's kind of an easy topic talking head video. I think it might resonate with people. And it was an easy way to do this integration as well. Totally. As it's a video that's directly going to point people back to that pricing video. So
right,
it kind of
right.
like reinvigorate some old stuff. So I was like, I think it'll be very valuable and be beneficial for myself.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome.
I think it'll be good. But
yeah,
it's been a nightmare. You know what else has been an absolute nightmare? That workbench.
Which one?
I told you I was like redoing my workbench top with like the laminate and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yes. Okay, yes. Give me an update on that.
Do you ever have a project that is just like you feel like you just need to cut your losses?
Everything I do. I mean, you could say that about my entire life, to be quite frank with you.
Okay, so to quickly summarize, it's two sheets of MDF laminated together, and then I surrounded it with hard maple, so like the edges are hard, and then I covered it with laminate.
Nice and glossy looking. I like it.
Yep. Right, no problem. And then I was like, well, I really want to put those like dog holes in, so you can use the little stops and like the hold downs and like all that stuff and whatnot. Well, I got the woodpeckers. Fuck, I don't know. Oh, there it is.
you were so close like before.
It's like this little like grid thing so that you can like hook up a router to it and basically cut out that like perfect like grid pattern with the holes or whatever.
Gotcha. Yeah.
It was like $300. Luckily enough, they sent it to me.
Okay.
That thing is crap.
Oh, so
absolutely.
Now what do you do?
Garbage. Well, so I like kind of did it. I did it. And the problem is it's like a 4x4 grid. And then you use these little like pins to like drop it in there. So then you can move the grid over and it's supposed to stay perfectly aligned.
Okay.
Well, it doesn't like it. Like move. It got like an 1/8-inch play on it, which is a lot.
Does it come with its own?
It's yeah, that's a good phenolic. Question.
Phenolic? What's that? That's
really, really dense, hard plastic.
Okay.
It's like a half-inch thick plastic.
Words. Does it come with its own router bit?
No, it comes with like those, like, have you seen those like brass bushings that you like twist on the bottom of a router?
Yeah, like a guide, right?
Yeah. So I use that, and then I use the half-inch bit, which is exactly what it says.
Huh.
But there's a boatload of slop in it. And I read the reviews and everybody just crucifies this thing.
Oh, really? I was going to say, I wonder if it's an issue of your half inch bit not quite being a half inch, like being like a 16th more than a half inch or something.
Or that little collet isn't perfectly centered to your drill bit or your router bit.
Yeah.
So that's why I tested, because I was like, I'm not doing this without dust extraction, because this is going to be a nightmare.
Yeah.
So I was just like, F it. I'm just going to go buy that Festool router, whatever the hell, like the medium size one, pay for it with my own money.
Mm-hmm.
Dust extraction is incredible, but it like perfectly centers like the it like automatically centers that guide thing around the bit. So like I used calipers and it was dead on.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But so that ended up being like kind of a nightmare. But then I got to think, you know, I'm really just going to kind of use the holes in the workbench to like hold stuff. I'm not really going to be using these holes to like make sure that things are perfectly square. So I wasn't really that concerned about it being slightly off.
Yeah, true.
But so I was like, okay, no problem. So I did all that. It took an eternity to route through an inch and a half of MDF and like 100 of these holes, right?
Yeah.
So I finally got that done. And then I went to go put in one of those like track saw clamps. Cause have you seen on like the Festool MFT grid that you can like put that track saw clamp in and like clamp stuff through the table basically?
Yeah. Yeah. That's really cool.
So I went to go do it. And then I'm like, oh my God, I'm an idiot.
Uh-oh.
The top is too thick. So the clamp doesn't have enough clearance.
It doesn't, it can't do 1.5 inches?
No.
What's the max it can do?
Like barely 3/4 of an inch.
What?
Yeah. Right.
So how are...
So the way like, because it's like an L shape. Yeah. So you have to kind of like hook the L through the hole and then like pull it under, like rotate it like 90 degrees.
Oh no.
It doesn't seem like it would be an issue, but it's actually a much tighter turn in that small dog hole than you'd think.
Oh.
So now I hit another snag and I'm just like...
Okay.
God, I'm getting so mad. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to flip it over. And then I use basically like a chamfer bit around all the holes to like relieve it.
Yes. Yeah.
Great. Solved the problem. But then I was like, well, I already put finish on the bottom. So like it doesn't absorb moisture and stuff.
Yeah.
And it just keeps going. So then I'm like, well, now I need to put a little finish around.
Then you got to refinish the whole thing, right?
The whole thing at the bottom. So it's like, no problem. Get that done. Flip it back over. Well, now the finish has leaked through all those holes and I've got like water polyurethane all over the top. And I'm like, oh, but it's laminate. It won't be an issue.
Yeah.
So I just take a little putty knife and just kind of like scrape it off. And then I'm like, oh, well, now there's kind of like it's off, but there's like residue color. Or like little tiny like outlines of where it was. And I was like, I want it to look nice and clean for the video. So this is, I should have just stopped, right? So then I was like, Derek's laughing. Then I'm like, I'm going to put a white Scotch-Brite pad on my standard because it's like unbelievably light abrasive. It'll just kind of like hold stuff up. So I put that on the sander, start, you know, sanding it and whatnot. And then the Scotch-Brite pad catches a little bit of laminate and just rips off a big old chunk of it. I'm like, you've got to be freaking kidding me.
Oh, no.
And so I'm like, what the hell am I going to do? So I'm like, do I just scrap this and just say F it and move on? So I did a little research and found out that what you can do is take like 40 grit sandpaper and just like scratch the hell out of the laminate and basically put another sheet of laminate on top of it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I'm going to do. And then I'm going to move on.
You have to recut all your dog holes if you do that, right?
Yeah. So what I think I'm going to do is basically like take a small drill bit from the bottom and drill through all of them and then take like a flush trim router bit and just zip it real quick through the laminate. That won't take too long.
Yeah, that won't be too bad. Still a pain in the ass, though. That sucks, dude.
I'm just like, this is the perfect example of like you get like going on a project and then you're like, I just keep making this worse. It kind of reminded me of your like QR table.
Yeah, yeah.
It just felt like it was just a never-ending battle and you should just be like, I'm done.
Screw it.
I declare bankruptcy.
Yeah, 100%.
How'd you get the thing in the hole again?
The clamp and
I took
the chamfer bit on the bottom side to basically like open it up so that it has more room for the clamp to get in there. But I'm going to be honest with you when I do the video, because it's already like a fairly lengthy video. I'm just going to be like, and then I, you know, cut the little chamfer things on the bottom and I was good to go. I'm
right.
Because nobody wants to see, like, I already messed up enough things. It's like, you only show so many mistakes on a video.
I know that's a, yeah, I've kind of, well, I think we've discussed this before in the past, but like, what mistakes do you include and right. which ones do you just leave out? Because it's like, unless there's like a learning, like something that you can say that would help prevent people from making the same mistake in the future. It's like, I don't know. And you also don't want to, like, as much as it sucks to say, you don't want to have your whole video be a bunch of mistakes, because then you lose credibility with the audience.
Right.
Like Cam was saying that, right? Like, he was like, I don't say anything self-deprecating or anything like that.
Right.
So it's because it's just like people just tune out, and it kind of sucks that you can't like show the full extent right. of the project and all, like how you got there. But sometimes it's for brevity's sake, for the sake of retaining your audience's attention, you just have to breeze right over some things.
Right. So yeah. I wanted to ask, you have laminate on your work surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
So yours is like a white kind of marbly kind of gray.
Yeah.
Color.
I'm not sure what it, I think maybe they were trying to like kind of be like faux concrete almost.
Okay.
But
okay.
yeah, something like that.
So when glue sticks to it, mm-hmm. does it just boom pop straight off, or does it like stick a little?
It sticks a little bit, but usually with a putty knife, you can just get it to chip off.
Okay. And yeah. then can you see a small residual outline from it?
Yeah. Usually I'll do, like, I'll chip it off, and sometimes there's like a little residual outline because there is a very fine texture to the table.
Right. Right.
Especially initially. So what I do, like, every, like, 3 months or so, I'll just get out 400 grit on the sandpaper, on the sander, and just go over the surface of the table and kind of polish out some of those, because the formica is really hard, so 400 grit like barely even does anything to it.
Right.
Yeah, and that usually helps. That being said, my tables don't look perfect. They're right. you know, they still have imperfections and stains and stuff on them.
Okay, so I think my issue is that I use matte black. So I'm
it has texture.
It has a little bit of texture to it. I should have got like high gloss, right?
Yeah, glossier probably would have been better.
Okay.
And that's what
I didn't lay down the second sheet yet. Maybe I'll just return it and get gloss black.
You might want to. It might be, the only thing about like gloss black is that it might look a little weird on camera sometimes.
Yeah, you can get a lot of
But I would say if what you're interested in is things releasing off it, easier gloss is going to be better.
What about if I got the matte black and then just periodically coated it with like wax or like,
yeah,
like a Rubio or something like that?
Yeah, that's certainly an option. I don't know. You might want to talk to Rubio and say like, hey, will it adhere very well? Like it might just not grip to the
right.
surface. Honestly, you'd probably be better off doing like a film finish, something that's a little bit higher building, and it would like fill in all those peaks and valleys of the matte surface.
Hmm.
Make it kind of glossy.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the extent of what I'm getting at is I'm trying to make this just look perfect and bulletproof, and even with laminate, like you're gonna get stuff stuck to it. And
yeah.
But it's just that a lot less will stick to it.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. 100%.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I would go for a glossier surface or even like a satin surface. Yeah. I'm just trying to think what would be the best thing to put on it. Because you could do like the Halcyon, the Total Boat Halcyon maybe. But those are going to be softer. So the thing is, that's going to like scratch and chip much more than the actual surface right. of the Formica will.
And it might just make things worse.
Yeah, it might just make things worse.
I mean, honestly, once it looks good on the video that I make it on, like, I think what I've realized through this whole process is this was a massive waste of time and undertaking to put this much time and effort into making a freaking workbench surface. Like,
yeah.
put a sheet of MDF on it, and then when it gets messed up, get a new sheet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe just laminate on the top and move on with your life. Like, yeah.
I mean, I like the fact that you're now learning how to resurface your table relatively quickly, right? So at least in the future, if it ever gets dinged up again, you'll be very well versed in how to just slap a new layer on it and you're good to go.
Yeah. And I'm also kind of using this as a test. Like, so I put a million dog holes in it, and I know for a fact I will never use all of those holes on there. So like, I'm going to try to learn, like, you know, do I really only need it on a quarter of the bench, or like, do I really just kind of like it in these areas? Like, I think it's a ever evolving thing.
Oh, for sure it is.
That you work on. And at this point, I just need to put another sheet of laminate on top of it, move on, be done with the damn project.
Yeah. I thought about putting a bunch of T-tracks in my tables at one point.
No.
But I was kind of... No?
No. T-track sucks, man.
Yeah, like even the aluminum stuff? Like, I was going to...
Here's the problem with T-track.
Okay, hit me.
If you get sawdust in there, if you get glue in there, if you get anything in there, it is instantly useless.
Okay. That makes sense.
You have to make sure that your tabletops are really thick, because if you use 3/4 inch tabletop, you have to route like a half inch deep, and then your screws only have like a 1/4 inch of material to bite into.
Mm-hmm.
Why a lot of people then epoxy the T-track in.
Oh.
And it's then like the bolts get jacked up in there. Like I honestly hate T-track.
I even have that issue on my CNC. Like when the CNC throws a little bit of dust, it gets in the T-tracks and it makes it kind of hard. So that makes sense. I hear you.
And it's expensive. It's like $40 for like a 3-foot section of T-track.
I know.
But I'm going to try these dog holes out. I've got some accessories. I got these little like teeny tiny, they look like quarters that you basically put in all the holes. So it'll then make the surface perfectly flat, so you won't drop stuff in the holes.
I like that.
And then you can pop them out super easy when you need to like use that hole.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to try it out.
I'm excited to see you try it out and then decide if I want to do it myself.
Right. If you do it. Absolutely do not buy that piece of shit woodpeckers thing.
Okay.
There's another one called like the PARF system.
PARF. P-A-R-F?
Yeah, it's like $300. It's about the same price. And it basically like is a drill system where like it uses trigonometry. So it uses the 3-4-5 triangle method to make sure that everything's like perfectly square. And it's a much larger reference area. But you have to basically go and drill a million like little teeny tiny guide holes, and then you go back. Yeah, that's the one on the screen there. How much is it? Like $300?
Ad.
It's from TSO, so $239.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can use Jason Bent's discount thing. Ooh, I think he has one. You can support him, just don't support the Green Suitors podcast. So you like put all these little pins in, and then there's like a perfectly sized drill bit for the dog hole.
Yeah.
That you go and like drill it after that.
Gotcha.
But honestly, Zach, if I were you, I'd just use your CNC.
I was literally just thinking that. I was like, I could probably get my CNC to do it because I got a 4x4 bed, so I could make it in two pieces.
Right.
And just have it,
Move on with your life.
Move on with my life.
Right.
Okay.
So once I have time to use it, I will report back and tell you my honest findings. And if I'm wrong and it sucks, I'm going to tell you.
All right. I mean, I appreciate that you're throwing woodpeckers under the bus. Not many people will be brave enough to do that.
They make some good stuff, but this is not one of them.
Honestly, I'm surprised. Cause,
plastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would you think it'd be solid like aluminum?
I thought so.
Yeah. I don't know. It's trash, though. I'll tell you that.
Crazy. They usually don't.
How much is the woodpeckers thing? Woodpecker.com.
I was looking at it earlier. I think it's $259.
That sounds about right. Yeah. I mean, if I would have spent my own money on that, I would have been furious.
Yeah. Well, now you can see why they have so many negative reviews on it.
Right. And even if you watch like the demo video on like their YouTube thing, you can see it moving like crazy.
Oh, really?
And if you look at the YouTube comments, they're just kind of like, yeah, well, you know, if you would have clamped it, it wouldn't have done it. But like, you know, you need to make sure that you clamp it so it doesn't move. And people are like, yeah, you're kind of missing the point. Like,
yeah, exactly.
They didn't clamp it in this photo.
Yeah, yep, I know. True. So in this photo, see those little like red pucks. So after you like cut the hole, you then put those little red pucks in. So then, and theoretically it holds that little template in place, but it doesn't.
Right.
So when you try to do the other holes, now your other holes are out of alignment with your other ones. And then you try to move the whole plate further over. And now you're referencing off holes that aren't referencing off another. And it just gets in this whole binded jungle of a mess.
Yeah.
It sucks. Don't buy it.
Rockler's got one for $50.
Really?
Yeah. It looks like it's just acrylic.
Bog hole routing template?
Yeah. Rockler dog hole routing template. You start on the corner of your table with three pegs to guide it, and then you make a few holes, and then they give you bigger pegs. Interesting.
So this looks like effectively the same thing. Let's look at the reviews.
3.5. It looks like it's the average, so not great. How do you, where are you? Here we go. Reviews. Works well. Works well.
Not great product, but usable.
Yeah. Great product, but it's another quality product from Rockler. One small complaint concerns the brass spacers. It should be the right depth, so it's not necessary to grind it down to the correct depth. Also, be sure to use care when setting up and make sure your spacing is consistent. Huh.
Yeah, I'm surprised they all use those collets and not just a guide bit.
Well, so the problem with a guide bit is that you would have to plunge it. So you have the potential to plunge into the template. Whereas like those guide bushings, you take the router bit all the way up and then you just position it over and the guide bushing kind of like traps in and then you plunge the router in.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. It basically doesn't seem like any of the routing templates are very good options.
Yes. Maybe I'll make my own routing template.
There you go.
3D printer, CNC. Option.
What's that? 3D printer, CNC? Oh, good question. Yeah. Probably CNC. It'd be faster.
Here's what you do. 3D printing
something like that would be slow.
You tell people. You go, now I'm going to use my my CNC to do this. But if you don't have that, just make it on your 3D printer. And if you don't have that, just use your laser.
Yeah. And if you don't have that, just get a job.
oh, man. That'd be good. Oh, that would be a good one. That's too funny. Well, I think we ought to wrap it up here and head to the after show. We got a lot of questions to get after, and I'm excited. All right,
I'm looking forward to it.
We got some names that don't typically pop up, so I'm excited.
Nice. Perfect.
Yeah. Well, we got anything we need to say before we head over to the after show?
Thank you for listening. Thank you to our patrons. And make sure you don't check out the Green Suitors podcast, available on iTunes, Spotify, and all places podcasts are found.
No longer Stitcher, because I don't know what Stitcher is, but I got an email that said Stitcher is going out of business.
Oh, but that's where we get like half our listens from.
Is it?
No. I have no idea.
Well, that's probably where the Green Suitors podcast gets all their listens, because they get all the third world proletariats that listen to that swill. I would rather listen to yodeling for an hour than I would the Green Suitors podcast.
I would rather listen to a didgeridoo concert live than the Green Suitors podcast.
Can you imagine that feeling though? That would like rumble your chest.
I know.
Maybe that's where Chris from the distillery was at the night before. He was at a didgeridoo concert.
Maybe.
Or maybe he was so taken aback because he'd listened to just a few minutes of the Green Suitors podcast and was like, I can't handle this anymore.
That's the joke we should have made at the start of the episode.
Yeah.
Live and you learn.
Well, there's always next week.
It's always next week.
And we will see everybody next week.
See you, everybody.